Hey guys, how's it going? My name is Joseph Fordham and this is NPLH In Conversation With, the football podcast that isn't about football, brought to you by NPLH Studio. NPLH is more than a podcast. Once you've hit the follow button, visit nplhmag.com to enjoy online reads, subscribe to our newsletter and browse our collection of magazines, prints and apparel. On to the show. Hello, I'm Joe Fordham and you're listening to NPLH. In this episode, recorded at the tail end of 2023, I'm speaking with Corey Pellett, founder and editor-in-chief of Versus. Corey shares the influences and inspiration behind his chosen career path, the circumstances and mission behind the creation of the influential platform, and the responsibilities that come with it. There's also sound advice on self-care, the importance of fulfillment in your work, and connecting with passions outside of it. Before we start, a quick reminder that NPLH is more than a podcast. Once you've hit the follow button, visit nplhmag.com, where you can enjoy online reads, subscribe to our weekly newsletter, and browse our collection of magazines, prints, and apparel. NPLH is an independent, ad-free platform, and your support, in whatever form, keeps us playing. Enjoy.
Hey, mate.
How you doing, Corey?
All good, man. How are you?
Yeah, good, mate. Really good. Been looking forward to this. You've been on my list for a while, but you know how these things work. You never quite get around to contacting everyone or getting everything done on the list.
Yeah, man, totally. I mean, look, also, you're sort of racking up, right? Racking up the guests. So, you know, you've got a lot of people to talk through, man, which is cool.
Yeah. Had some really good conversations. And it's funny, it's I recorded episode one a year ago now, but I remember being so nervous getting that first one done.
And how have you dealt with those nerves since? Has that sort of been something that's gone away over time, or you still get like little butterflies before you do it? Yeah, how does that work?
It's definitely nerves replaced by excitement.
That's the right way to go, I think.
Yeah, it's like it's with anything. It's like the fear of something you haven't done before, whether you're going to be all right at it or whether it's going to be received the right way. But then the more you do it and the more you get from it, you start to care less about what the reception is of it, and you're doing it for the right reasons all of a sudden. Why I was attracted to speaking to you is because I've learned of your work through social media, as everyone else, I guess. And it's always on the pulse, quite a massive reach. And I guess I was just curious to learn your background and what got you to this point, really, and what motivates you and inspires you to keep this going?
So my background, I mean, I was sort of fairly lucky in that quite early on, I knew that I wanted to do journalism as like a career and work in media. My light bulb moment was like I went to a state school in Sussex that wasn't that great. None of my parents had gone to uni. And as a result, like I was on this thing called Aim Higher, which was like a program that I don't think exists anymore, where kids that were like good at school, but hadn't had university historically in their family, like got taken on like little trips to unis here and there to sort of learn about higher education, I suppose, try and raise aspirations and give them things to aim for. So I went on a trip to the University of Brighton as like a 13 or 14 year old back in year nine. Was flicking through the prospectus of courses to study and found a sports journalism course, which as just a fairly sheltered like kid, didn't really know that existed either as like an academic route or really as a career either. And that was when I was quite young, but that was the sort of thing that planted the seed in my head quite quickly that, you know what, I'm a good writer. I love football. That's like a really nice way to marry my two passions. So throughout GCSEs and A-levels, I was quite keenly focused on the idea of learning as much about media as I could. And to that end, alongside two colleagues when I was 16, so I say colleagues, like mates, to be honest, Arif and Lewis, we started a magazine called SQ, Sussex's only independent student magazine when we were 16 and 17. Did that for 10 issues, which wasn't just football focused. It was much more like music and culture focused. But what it did was it gave us pretty much a 360 crash course in everything that media production takes in terms of finding talent to interview, doing design and production for a magazine, literally doing door-to-door ad sales to fund it. We sort of by ourselves basically did everything that a slightly bigger media house would do. Did that for 10 issues strong, which equated to like 5 or 6 years all the way through uni. Launched a website, did a YouTube channel, did a podcast. And by the end of university, through our work with that independent magazine, had built a really decent portfolio of what I would say was like really good work, especially for someone who hadn't had any professionally trained experience. So we'd done that for a long time. I was lucky enough to win a Guardian Student Media Award through my work there. And when I left university, Complex UK was just launching. Now Complex is a US-based lifestyle title that looks at hip-hop culture, sneaker culture, style culture, essentially all the things that I was very, very interested in as a 16 and 17 year old. Ironically, a lot of SQ was based and inspired by the sort of stuff Complex did. So back in the day, Complex did this amazing thing where that they essentially were known for having the best front covers in all of magazines, with A-list stars like Kanye, Kid Cudi, J. Cole, Drake, Eminem. Every big rapper in the world at that point had had a Complex cover and had had a very, very sick one. We were inspired by that. So when we found out literally upon graduating that Complex was opening in the UK, it felt like a bit of a stars aligning type moment. So was lucky enough to join that team upon launch. I think so myself and Lewis, who I did SQ with, joined Complex at the same time. We both went from uni to Complex almost as colleagues, I suppose, from SQ right the way through. And we were working there before we graduated. So it was a very quick transition from uni to work. And we were really lucky with that. And while working at Complex was really, really sick, what became clear was I counted myself as a hip hop fan and a music lover and someone who could contribute to that conversation. In reality, there were people in the world far better at that than me. And I realized that quite quickly at Complex. What Complex didn't have when it launched was any football focus. And I obviously still love football hugely. So what I managed to do was make a real lane for myself by covering football and sport through a lifestyle lens at Complex UK, where my job essentially was to try and look at how Complex covered the NFL and the NBA, typically because they weren't a sports first title. They covered those sports in a culture first way. So my job was really to look at European football and figure out how do we cover that in a culture first way. So this might sound like old hat in 2023, but back in 2014, 2015, talking to Adam Lallana about Mario Balotelli and Daniel Sturridge listening to Drake in the Liverpool dressing room was actually quite innovative and quite different. Talking to Anthony Joshua about his dream ring walk, him saying it would be Stormzy, us covering that, and then Stormzy walking into the ring 3 months later, that was like a really cool new cultural conversation. And we were looking at sport through a music and style lens in a way that no one else really was in the UK. And from that point, we had just like tons of success, basically, working with amazing players, amazing brands, and doing things that I think no other football publisher in the UK was really doing. They weren't having the conversations we were having. They weren't looking at jerseys in the same way. They weren't looking at the stuff players were wearing off pitch in the same way. They weren't even looking at players and their social / political motivations in the same way. Like, of course, Marcus Rashford doing his, child poverty campaign in 2020, 2021 was super significant versus quite rightly was all over that. And I'm sure we'll come to that in time. But even back in 2015, you had players starting to reconnect with their communities in far more grassroots ways, whether it was boots giveaways, pitch openings, going back to their old schools and sort of retelling their stories. That wasn't getting much coverage at the time. We were very hot on that and trying to uplift the idea that football can be a vehicle for positive change. So we had lots of success with Complex, but ultimately what I and we found was as a team is that Complex was US dominated and European football only had so much rope given to it within that structure. And we often wouldn't say we were kneecapped, but we didn't have like the creative freedom to tell the stories we wanted to tell with the ambition we wanted to tell them in. So to that end, we essentially span off an independent title, completely separate from Complex, that really took the best bits of our football coverage and our sports culture coverage into a new home where there was no glass ceiling. And that's what Versus was. It was inspired by the idea that there was no real home of convergence culture in UK media for football. Our founding mission was to document football, style and music, right? Three things that I had loved since a kid, but I didn't really see reflected in other platforms at the time. I felt like football platforms, whether it was 442, Soccer Bible, Bleach Report, were very, very football focused at the time and didn't look at culture very much in the way that I thought they should do. Or on the other hand, you had Grime Daily, like NME magazine, whatever you want to call it, which were very, very music focused and didn't look at sport and the intersection there very much. I felt like there was a place in the middle to meet as a melting pot. And that's how and why we started Versus, essentially, because we had seen football changing from the front row based on the work we had done. And we felt like someone needed to really be a torchbearer in that conversation and try and, yeah, talk about the future of football every single day with unlimited ambition. And that is what we did. And continue to do.
Using that term torchbearer there, does that come, do you feel a kind of weight of responsibility then in what you're doing?
I think so, yeah. And I would say it was especially bright. Or the thing with torches are they can be bright and dim at different points. I think you'll find that at certain moments in the Versus journey, we've taken a very, very big responsibility to talk about important issues in football and really try and be outspoken with our stories and our lens in a way that we don't feel other publishers have done so. When we are in those moments, that torch is burning bright and everyone in the team is carrying it alongside me, basically. At other times when, to be honest, it is so, so busy and hectic that those big conversations can sometimes get lost. I think we always have an enduring desire to, yeah, use our platform to push football forward, I think. And that doesn't always come in headline grabbing ways that you might see from podcast episodes or opinion pieces or interviews with players. But actually, it might be us doing behind the scenes work, like inviting people into the office who dream of working in football but have never thought they could do. It might come from projects with commercial partners that fly under the radar a little bit, but are all geared around improving accessibility to football. And I think that whether you see the Versus torch shining brightly with our biggest moments or not, everything we do is really geared around the idea of trying to create a better future for football. And I think that mission that we all share as a team is why we've been so successful up to this point, and that there's no one is mixed up or confused about why they join Versus or why they're part of our team. They're part of our team because they believe in our mission, which number one is to, like I said, make football more equal, more accessible than it's ever been before. Number two, to like champion players and their right to self-expression. And number three, just to essentially try and shake shit up. And where important conversations need to be had and arguments need to be lifted or marginalized voices need to be given their spotlight, we're often the only place that really does that on a regular basis. And I think having such a clear moral mission to what we do means that everyone who joins our team subscribes to that, really. And we're all singing from the same hymn sheet on day one. Yeah, we're very passionate about using our platform to try and have the right conversations at the right time, and we don't feel inhibited, I think, by, I suppose, the bullshit that can surround a lot of media sometimes. Our sort of MO day to day is just to free it and to do what we believe. And that, obviously, you could argue is like a higher risk strategy sometimes. But I think for us, what it shows, both from an audience perspective, from a brand perspective, and I suppose from the commercial work we do, is that we're like a very real platform with very authentic ties to essentially culture and society, the two things that we believe football has a really big impact on.
What I'm taking from that is that even though you've gone into this pursuing a career in journalism, as you've left school, gone into university through that scheme, and then, you know, you've ended up at Complex, which would be good to loop back on that in a minute, actually. But what I'm pulling from what you've just said is that you've entered as a journalist, but to me, it sounds like that's almost being replaced by activism, which obviously journalism is a part of. Do you see your role in that way?
I mean, I sort of learned this about myself retrospectively, really, is that I think I was always like a massive news hound as like a kid, and was always really interested in what was happening in the world, who it was happening to, where I suppose the power laid in a way in different aspects of society. And that's why journalism spoke to me quite early, I think, is because I just wanted to know what the world was like and wanted to know what the latest stuff was all the time. That's why I think news stood out to me, something I wanted to do. But beyond that, I think what I was also really interested in, and it's probably led a bit to it there, was like politics and making change and trying to get a sense of how you push the world forward. And of course, as a, like, you know, 16, 17 year old starting SQ, there's limited change you can make, right? Obviously, when you are studying your A levels at college. But even with that magazine, when we were 16, 17, our real motivation for that wasn't just to give ourselves a portfolio. It was grounded by something a bit more deeper and a bit real, which was that in the place we grew up, there was literally no experience available for media or creativity in the town, and there still isn't now. And that burned a little bit I think the UK anyway, obviously has like a huge problem with like geographical inequality, whether that is financial, but also opportunities as well, I think. And I think outside of London, Manchester, those big cities, if you don't live within those territories, that city radius, your access to do the stuff you're passionate about is often quite difficult outside of your hometown. So when we started SQ, our motivation really was to show that people from where we came from, which wasn't some like mad impoverished place, but just didn't have media opportunities, could do cool shit. And we also so when we started SQ, we wanted to give opportunities to people like us, the chance to illustrate, design, write, photograph. That was like an underlying mission. And similarly with Versus now, of course, on the one hand, we love talking about the latest PSG Jordan drop. Of course we do. Do we get a buzz from seeing Jude Bellingham front row at LV at Fashion Week? Obviously. But underneath that, I think what we discovered was the thing we were most passionate about as like a team was new ideas in football. And what we would often get riled up by is while we were really happy to see Jude Bellingham front row at Fashion Week, there would actually be a community of pundits, media commentators, fans who would like take a lot of issue with that. Under the sort of age-old stick to football narrative. And I think what we found as a platform was that we had a lot of value to give in terms of taking that conversation in the other direction. If they were going to pull in the stick to football direction, we should actually pull even harder in the footballers can do what they want direction almost. And you can sort of take that narrative through all of our passion points, especially when it comes to music and style. So what I'm trying to circle back to is that we always had a bigger mission, which was to change football and challenge maybe tired narratives, fight against prejudice and uphold positivity in the game. Like we also launched at a time when I think it was after Euro 2016, like Raheem Sterling was getting absolutely like murdered in the press. Number one for his performances, but also for how he lived off the pitch. Obviously, he challenged that narrative himself a few years later, which was amazing. We were around to sort of ride that wave. But we recognized that players didn't really have much of a voice in a lot of modern media. And the voice they did have was often caricatured, patronized, wasn't given the respect and freedom it deserved. And again, we saw our position as actually, we can be on the side of the players. We, at least at the time, we're of a similar age to them. We like the same stuff. We aren't a million miles away from them in terms of how they see the world. Actually, we have a lot of value to give in terms of championing them when they need it, fighting against oppressors when they feel oppressed, but also calling them out if they do something wrong, because that will come from a place of real authority and sincerity. So from very early on, okay, we liked cool shit in football. What we really liked was just newness and new ideas and shaking up establishments that had maybe been in place for too long. And I think that is the founding mission that still lives with us today. And of course, we followed those missions as journalists, as creatives, and I still do now to some extent. But 100%, as the business has grown, like, you know, I've seen it go from myself and Lewis to like a team of 12 and 13 now. So naturally, as that team builds, I'm certainly less in the weeds, I suppose, as like a journalist typically would be. But there's certainly value that hopefully I can still offer in terms of setting that general direction of what our content should be and trying to be a thought leader internally where I can. And a lot of that, I suppose, does stem from activism and compassion and wanting just to tell the right stories and, yeah, uphold the right people at the right time.
It interests me here because that sort of thing doesn't just come out of nowhere. So, you know, you mentioned you had that curiosity as a kid, and there was the political interest as well, always wanting to know why things were a certain way, who's pulling the strings and why are they pulling in this way or that way. So what are you exposed to that's kind of giving you these influences?
Yeah, I don't know. I wish I did know. I wish I could answer that in a more straightforward way. Honestly, don't know. I just feel like for whatever reason, I've always wanted to just see the world be better than it is, see the people around me be better than they are, and see how we can help. Like I also like mentioned that as far as like, you know, I've been really lucky and privileged to at different points, right, to have found the thing that I wanted to do quite early, to have gone to university, to have walked into that job that I knew was right for me, to have then been given the freedom to create a platform independently alongside like my best friend. Like there are a lot of things within that story that I don't take for granted. And as a result, I think it's even more important that when you've had these breaks or you have been given the chance to do something that you feel really lucky to do, you also try and pay that back and work out, okay, with the freedom I've been given, what can I do to do good ultimately? Like I look back at the Complex stuff, there are also days at Complex where I would just work on the most random, clickbaity, engagement heavy stories that of course were like really good for numbers and gave you that very quick shot in the arm of 1,000 retweets. Well, hey, we're off. But when that settles down and you leave the office for the day, what are you left feeling? And often I'd be left feeling nothing. And I think that also made me realize that within the work we do, like you can leave with that feeling of satisfaction on a far deeper level. Again, like the way the media industry has gone, right, is that so much is geared towards that like very quick endorphin hit like from readers or creators. Like the whole industry has been geared to ensure that you're chasing that viral story and readers get that viral story very quickly. I think that obviously there are aspects of that you know, we still work with now because you want your work to do well, but we've also sort of turned our back on that whole clickbait culture and tried to only lend our voice to things that really matter and we know will leave us feeling good at the end of every single day. And I've not really answered your question there, to be honest. I've taken it in a different direction. But I think day to day, what I've learned professionally is that I feel far better when I'm doing stuff that matters. And I think the people around me do as well. And that's what we try and chase every day. But like from a background perspective, yeah, I can't give you an answer. I've been wondering that myself because I haven't come from any real like bad environment, not really a lot of trauma. I'm fairly privileged and lucky in that respect. So I don't think it comes from any deep-seated aspect to try and change the world on what I've experienced, but more or less just wanted to try and do cool shit and good shit that I think, yeah, hopefully helps other people.
You know, it was actually quite warming to hear what drives you there and that it is a matter of feeling aligned deep down with what you're putting out. Do you think that in approaching it that way, in that looking first at what makes you feel good at the end of the day means that you are, as a byproduct of that, putting out better work and people resonate with it more because they can tell it's coming from a genuine place?
Yeah, I think so, totally. And in terms of, obviously, you have to look at the context of your own life and look at how you maximize the work you're doing and what makes you happiest and how that essentially leads to your personal, I suppose, growth. But like for us at Versus, in the early days, we sort of just did work that we felt was important and made us feel good. And I'll be honest with you, that wasn't like a quick road to success. That was a long, hard grind. And it probably took 3 years really for Versus to, I think, work as it currently works right now. But we always followed what was sort of quite deep internal and stuff we believed in. And we didn't get swayed from that too much. And I think staying the course and being consistent led to sort of the success we've had further down the line. And obviously you can't always do that depending on your circumstances and your scenarios. But even if you don't get that same level of deep fulfillment from work day to day, I think it's really important to try and find stuff outside of that that you do find deep fulfillment from, but also like be consistent with it and stick with it. Because if you are hoping to try something that you're passionate about, that gives you that deep fulfillment, and for it to pay off really quickly, I don't think it will. It's really rare that it will. But if you are consistent with it, that is when you'll reap the rewards further down the line. I think it's really true that consistency might trump every other aspect of like process in terms of finding success at the end of the road. Like even in the world we work in, right, it takes a long time for people to be aware of what you do, for budgets to then open up, for partners to want to come on board. It might take 2 years since someone is aware of what you do until they're being in a position where they can work with you. And if you're not consistent for that 2 year period, then that opportunity won't be there. I think within media and storytelling and creativity more general, I think you're always looking at the work you do now being a very small seed that you plant that hopefully will grow further down the line. And when that does grow, you might not know when that flower hatches and pops out of the ground, but when it does, that's when you'll see the rewards from it. So I think it's a lot of blind faith, actually, following what you do and doing what you love. But I think you sort of got to believe it will pay off. In terms of what we do right now, like we're at a stage where not every single thing we do 100% of the time is like a passion project, right? Like in reality, we're a business. Some things that we do, we love more than others. And that is just the nature of the beast. And I can 100% feel when we are not as passionate about something, like the quality dips and the motivation to do it dips and it becomes a real drawn out affair. And I think we feel that even more succinctly because we're so used to doing things that we love. And when you suddenly switch from one to the other, it feels like a big weight on your shoulders. And I think Eddie Hearn's biggest motto is like, no passion, no point. That's been like the foundation for Matchroom sport success over like 20, 30 years from his dad to him. And I think that's a pretty good motto to live by, to be honest, in that if you are trying to build a business and you're not passionate about it, or you're trying to do anything successful for yourself and you're not passionate about it, it's very unlikely that you're going to maximize your outcomes. So yeah, finding that passion is difficult, but once you do it, like, be consistent with it and don't give it up, I think.
Yeah, what you said there really resonates. I can relate to that in terms of NPLH. Specifically over the past 12 to 18 months, I think. And there's definitely, after like 4 or so years of the magazine, taking a break from that at the end of last year and trying something a little bit different this year, just hasn't felt good. No, it's I'm referring to a mini zine series that's gone out quarterly through this year. Mm-hmm. And it was worth trying it out, but it didn't feel very NPLH to me. So yeah, there's no excitement. Yeah. And like you say, yeah, there's not really been any passion in it beyond just a love of print that I have. And that's where it started. But there's no real value outside of that. And it's something that I'm just going to let go of now, you know, and just put that down to a bit of experience. How do you reset yourself when you go through those experiences where you're like, this isn't feeling like the one?
That's a very good question. And one, I suppose, that to be honest, I'm still figuring out today. I'd be lying if I said I haven't burnt out once or twice in the last 2 years, just from it being so, so relentless. And I think the first step is like being aware, I think, that you're not like fully okay within yourself. If you can tell yourself that, then that is like step one. You can acknowledge that, take stock of it, and not essentially hate yourself or feel too bad for not being at your absolute optimum at any given time. I think the second step, if you have a team around you that you like sort of support and trust, actually being open with them and telling them that you're not at your best right now and you need patience is like a really good thing to do as well. And I think thirdly, just trying to find inspiration in other areas, maybe things that aren't expected. Like if you're not loving your work right now, take a step back, find out what you do love. And it might be totally non-work related, and actually try and immerse yourself within that and get some passion for life back. Whether that is actually, okay, going hard on running for like a couple of weeks, because you know that gets you back in a certain zone. Going hard on the gym, going hard on like gaming, reading, whatever it might be, movies. I think if you have a passion outside of your work that you know you're into, try and reconnect with that just to get a feeling of love back inside you. And then hopefully with enough time, that love you've built back up, you can transfer back to your work. That's what I've tried to do at various points. And sometimes it's worked, sometimes it hasn't. But also, there's no easy fix for this stuff. And you don't actually know how long those periods of burnout or whatever else it might be will last for. I just think as long as you are self-aware and are able to acknowledge that and just try and take whatever steps might be to build yourself back up, that's the first step. I think being naive to it, ignoring it and shutting off, which actually is the easiest thing to do sometimes, and that I'm going to ignore those feelings and just power through and keep on grinding and keep on pushing, that only works for so long. I used to try and do that all the time. But it is true that everyone has a point where actually you've hit your wall and you can't keep on pushing through it. You just can't. You need to recharge and build that strength back up before you push through it again. And if you take the time to build that back up, actually, you'll be well equipped to not just go through that wall eventually, but also the next one and the one after and the one after that. And you know what? At some point, you'll hit that wall again, but repeat the process. It's not a quick process or easy steps that work for everyone. But for me, yeah, it's just try and be open with the people around you, seek support where you can, and then, yeah, try and find love in other stuff where you can as well.
Sound advice for anyone listening there, and even myself, scribbled a few things down there that I've acquired a few tools over the past couple of years that do come in handy. But there's a lot of value in learning how other people take care of themselves and approach these things. And there's always something to learn.
Depends on what sort of person you are as well. Like I think I've really tried like every single year to try and do the goal setting, being very focus with what I want to work on and achieve this year and why. It just doesn't work for me. I really try and commit to it at the start. I then fall away. I'm not actually like brilliantly organized, and I'm not extremely rigid with how I work and what I do. I try and take more notes, but a lot of our work, my process, just lives up here in my own head, and that isn't always the best way to be. But actually, a lot of the time, it's just how I've worked and how I've come to be. Is I'm very instinctive. Jump from thing to thing quite quickly. And I think I need the people around me to be organized, to be honest, because I just don't naturally have that like disposition. It's not a skill set, it's a disposition. I think I'm much more comfortable being instinctive and sort of following whatever the voice in my head tells me that day and going off and doing it. And therefore, like, I know that other people might find where they're in a lull period, right? We'll get the planner out, get the sketchbook out, try and goal my way out of something. And that totally works for a lot of people. Just for me, it doesn't. And that's why I sort of, whenever I have those low moments, I tend to need to be quite explorative and like really try and get in my head, get in my feelings, work out what's wrong. And then actually, like I said, try and find other stuff that I like or enjoy. And feel my way out of it in a very fluid sense, rather than being like quite military with it. Getting to a stage where, and it's difficult, you do know yourself that well, I think is really important. And it doesn't come for everyone at the same time. Some people know that when they're 18, others know it when they're 50. You just don't know. But the sooner you can get a sense of how your head works and how your brain works, I think the better you'll be for it, especially when you come into those dark or more difficult moments.
How has that in your instinctive nature kind of married up with growing a business? Because that maybe could be, it could go one of two ways, right? It could either be progressive or destructive in equal measure. So the challenges that come with growing a business must be, you know, they must weigh heavily, and it comes up with a lot of problems and a lot of problem solving.
Yeah, like I said, I think that's almost why with the team you build around you, you want to have complementary skill sets, I guess, and complementary approaches to work and life. What I think I've been quite good at is communicating like a direction and a vision from day one up until now, really, for this is what Versus is, this is what we stand for, this is what we want to achieve, here's how we're going to do it. Go off and do it, basically, a little bit. And of course, to be fair, that maybe I do get hands-on quite a lot. But I think if you are someone who is extremely organized, mechanical, process-driven, it can be, maybe it's less common to have those moments of inspiration, improvisation, instinct that sort of sets you on a roadmap and a pathway. Like I might, for example, I might not be the right person to lay that path, but I can tell you what direction we should go in and do it.
It's quite a good grip of your ego there, isn't it? Because this is something that you've created and you are wanting to grow. And I can relate to that with MPLH, and that's probably my need to have a grip on everything has hindered it in all sorts of ways, because it's like 5 years old now, and I'm coming to a point where I'm like, oh, maybe it just needs to be knocked down and started again in a new way. But you sound quite aware that you are, yeah, well, you may not be the best person to do X, Y, Z. That's a dismantling of ego there, right? Is that something that's that you've had to work on in being the kind of the person that's brought the brand to life?
I think that if you would like to look at any of my social channels personally, I'm not massive on ego or my own profile or making a profile for myself necessarily. I've always been much more interested in doing the work, putting the hard yards in and giving other people the platform to shine, I suppose. So therefore, when it comes to the sort of conversation you're raising there, I'm like very keenly dispositioned to knowing what my limits are, taking a back seat where I need to, giving assistance where I need to, taking a lead where I need to, but not needing to. Well, certainly recognizing that Versus is way bigger than me, and it should be way bigger than me. If we've got the ambitions for it that like the team does, there's no way I can be like the overriding ego control person on that side of the business. I just need to, well, yeah, we should be working together in sort of equal harmony to make that brand be bigger than it is. And of course, there are people within our team, Maiwa and Amy especially, who are, and Johnny as well, to be fair, our commercial leads, who are far more comfortable and happy to be the public faces and go out and evangelize the brand, be on camera, go promo mad on LinkedIn. I do bits of it here and there, but that's not my best skill set, nor what my main motivation is. I think I'm far more comfortable letting other people do that. So in terms of like ego and how that's worked within our business and building that business, it's never actually been a problem. I would say that, I mean, to probably actually share some synergy with what you've said, like the relinquishing control aspect of it, I, in principle, am quite good at it, but I still find myself in the weeds of so much so often, to the extent where I probably need to be even further removed, to be honest. And I think that it doesn't come from a place of being like a control freak necessarily. It just comes from caring so much and wanting the best work to be done and recognizing that if I can help everyone add an extra 5-10% to what they can do, then I want to be in a position to do that. Now, you obviously have to pick and choose your battles with that, I think, because some things might need an extra 5%, some things won't. And that's the battle that I constantly go on, right? Is, okay, where can I most add value and who needs it most? But no, ego's not really been a thing for me, luckily. I think that, yeah, I'm naturally self-aware and grounded enough where I can check myself in certain situations, know when I can best add value and when I can't. And hopefully, I think that approach and that mentality, I guess, hopefully has added to like the strong teamship and sort of team culture we've built over the past 3-4 years. Because I think if the person leading the organization is a bit of a prick, to be honest, or just a bit too driven in one way, then I don't think that does much good to growing the other people on the team's profiles or professional development. I think having a nice balance personally with your mental approach to work hopefully gives others the space to shine and grow as well. Where I think an overbearing leader or an overbearing ego won't do that in quite the same way.
it's actually admirable to hear that you can kind of have your something that is very close to you, something that you're very protective over, but still have that awareness to let go in the moment, and you knowing it's for the greater good rather than thinking something will go wrong if you give people the freedom to operate.
I think the great thing is that, again, like we've managed to build a brand and a team where I know that what we do means as much to them as it does to me. And therefore, when you know that you're placing like work, not just in competent hands, but in passionate hands, I think that really helps. If it was just any old business working with any old team member, maybe it would be more difficult, because I know we're all so aligned and so passionate about what we want to achieve. It doesn't feel like such a burden, but actually like a privilege to be able to do that for people.
Could you walk away from Versus if it meant Versus going to the next stage of where you see it going?
I don't know. It's an interesting question. Like, I mean, it would be circumstantial. I think for where we are right now, it would be difficult to imagine it happening in this moment. But if you ask me again in 2 or 3 years, I could see it. I would never say never, because I think the biggest privilege and the biggest challenge equally in terms of growing Versus has been seeing how your decisions and leadership are like responsible for the fates of other people. Like I said, we're lucky enough to be giving, like, you know, again, we started this with just me and Lewis doing it part-time essentially in and around our complex work. You look at it now where Versus has, you know, it's its own independent company, has 12 full-time staff, recruiting for 2 more people currently, likely to go on another hiring spree in January, February. Like, we're employing a lot of people in an area that they're passionate about and love. That's like extremely, makes me extremely proud, but also there's a lot of pressure, because you don't only just form close connections and bonds with those people that are working with you, but you know that there's a reality where your decisions, the business's decisions, the business's successes will have like knock-on effects to their own lives and livelihoods. And I find that like really amazing, but also challenging, because that's the lens I look at the work through the whole time, is this what's best for the team? How will this affect the team in 6 months' time? And if that required a departure from me, because either I felt like I'd done all I could do, or my passion had gone, or whatever had happened, I wouldn't cling on for clinging on's sake. I don't think that does any good, me, the business, or the staff. So yeah, of course, it's not something I think necessarily I would say will happen immediately, but hypothetically, could it happen? Yeah. Not quickly, but yeah.
In your answer there, you touched on the hiring of some new team members with the probability of that happening again in the new year. And outside of just hiring new team members, it's opportunities you're giving people there to break into an industry that you didn't see any opportunities for yourself when you were younger. How does it feel to you on an individual level that you are someone that creates those things that you didn't see back then? It's a full circle moment in a way.
Not to go all too Roy Keane on us, but I think that's my job, right? Like whether it was like, again, with SQ was at 16, I was trying to give people opportunities then, whether it was starting Versus up earlier on, trying to give like new writers a space to have their work shared, or whether it's hiring people now on a full-time basis. I don't look at that with any great sense of individual like ego, because I think the fact that we're hiring means everyone on the team is doing so well. The fact we're hiring means that everyone has done well enough for us to be in a position where we can hire, and we are growing as a team and as a company. So I put that down to sort of everyone's success, to be honest, not just like my own. The fact that, again, myself, Johnny, Lewis, whoever it might be, will decide who comes on. There's like, is there a bit of like a kingmaker complex there? Like, probably to some extent. But it's also equally hard, like, telling people that they're not being hired, right? So again, it's like a double-edged sword, I think. So I don't take any great personal pleasure in it, because I think that's what we should be doing. And if we are true to our company ambitions to, again, make football more accessible, give more people who maybe have felt disenfranchised from the game a stake within it, then bringing people onto our team for their first shot in this world, that just comes with the territory. So yeah, the second we're not doing that is the second we've sort of stopped being what we proclaim to be, I guess.
Well, I think it's quite beautiful that what you're doing there is what you've been doing since you were a 16-year-old boy. It's evolved from a hobby and a creative outlet into a thriving business that sustains people's lives. I find it fascinating and quite beautiful that that is something that started half a lifetime ago.
Literally for me, yeah, literally. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, you've used this word a few times today, but it has been a privilege to learn how it started and what it means to you and why it's important to you that others get those opportunities. And good on you, mate. Thank you.
Appreciate that, man. Thank you. I don't do this sort of stuff that often, I suppose. So it is nice to try and, yeah, just share the story where possible. And I know that you're coming at it from a place of, like, you know, sincerity and like passion yourself. So no stress, man, at all. Thank you for giving us the shout.
Oh, good one, mate. I'll let you crack on with your day.
Cool. Appreciate it, brother. In a bit.
Bye, mate. Take care. Thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you haven't already, I'd love you to hit the follow button and forward it on to a friend. You can also find us on social media via @NPLHMag and subscribe to our weekly newsletter via nplhmag.com. See you next time. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. Don't forget to hit the follow button, and I'll see you next time.